Sugar Bubble。Hello and welcome to Burst the Bubble. You're listening to Cam FM with me, Chris Smoten, my regular co-denizen, Michael Contario.
Hello.
And irregular denizen, Rich Wareham.
Hello.
This is a show about silly news. It's sort of have a good news for you or the news quiz for if you've researched your stories in much, much less time. So, let's start with our first story. We're going to be talking about cats in Downing Street. Specifically, as it would turn out, in the past week, there has been minor controversy circling around the fact that a rat has appeared on many news broadcasts from taking place outside 10 Downing Street.
Was it being interviewed?
Or was it the interviewer?
As far as I'm aware, it was an extra.
I wasn't aware they had extras in Downing Street.
I just like the idea.
Are they not real policemen then? Are they just extra policemen that hang around? Their job is sit there, don't talk to any of the actors, just sit and look like a policeman.
One of them also plays the rats, where you never see them in the same scene.
I'm presuming those policemen there have a pretty cushy job, right, actually, outside Downing Street. I mean...
Well, it depends if you consider standing about for 24 hours to be a cushy job.
I mean. But they're unlikely to come in the line of fire, are they? I mean, you think of the front of Downing Street. It's got those massive gates. It's got all the guards beyond it. If they are the last line of defence of the government in this country, then really, that's not a great job. But they're not, because if whichever force can get through the massive wrought iron gates, can get all the way through London, can blast their way to the very Downing Street door, probably two policemen looking rather bored and not going to stop them.
Yeah, that sort of you've got to be completely bored most of the time and then have awesome ninja skills in which you can take down a 10,000-man Chinese army just the one time.
Actually, that would be wonderful, actually, if something did come to the door and they just broke off one of the railings and split it into two nunchucks and started wailing around themselves and said, aha, you thought we were just bored policemen, but no, we are secret ninjas.
It's like, okay, this is what the character that we made up last week, Captain McNinja MP, could come and help them.
Well, he'd be busy, of course. We need a non-MP ninja for this very particular scenario. Captain Ninja MP can handle the rest. But, yes, right. And the nunchuck plan would be great, except for the fact that a railing isn't particularly a pair of nunchucks.
They're special Downing Street railings. That's why they look sort of rather large and imposing and black. They actually split into nunchucks.
So you can actually... Yeah. I don't know why I'm miming that.
Well, I was miming it as well. It's a natural thing. When you say the word nunchuck, you have to mime a nunchuck. It's actually something... It's like when pigeons walk and they have to nod their head. It's just something built into your genetics. Anyway, the story
that we're talking about. Yes, the actual story. You say that, it's going to be a bit of a...
There's a rat in Downing Street, is there? There is a bit of politics, ladies and gentlemen.
There is a rat in Downing Street, yes. The obvious Cameron joke has been made to the point that it would be frankly embarrassing to make.
It would rather, but you know, I'm sure there are people who were sitting there expecting it, so there, we got it out of the way.
There you go, yeah, you got a meta joke.
Exactly.
I don't know if joke's the right word. You got a meta utterance.
So, meta references apart, we have a rat in Downing Street.
The story is David Cameron was asked, do you want to get a cat to sort that out? And said,
Which is a fair point, because if you think about the number of things on his agenda for the day, you know, sort out the economy, try to do whatever it is else that they do when they're running the country, probably rats are quite low down the list, you know, especially because you have a choice between covering up the secret existence of aliens or sorting out the rat problem. And presumably what he actually said, he was like, well, can't we just get someone in? Is there not enough money in the kitty fund, no pun intended, to
not to intended.
The previous one died. the previous one died not all that long ago, didn't it? The chief mouser or something.
Exactly. That's the point. You see, it's a chief mouser. It's not a chief ratter. Now, if you've seen a domestic cat, they can deal with mice quite well and small birds, but a rat is almost about the size of it if it's a small cat, especially if it's a well-fed Downing Street rat.
Yes, true, yes. The scraps from the Prime Ministerial table are probably pretty luxurious.
Exactly. You know, the huge banquet that I imagine that Cameron has at the beginning of every cabinet meeting.
There's probably a metaphor in here somewhere, because, I mean, you know, the obvious, you know, fat cats at the top sort of thing, but then his cat, you know, his smaller, regular-sized cat is failing to take out a rat, Yeah, I don't know. I mean, make up your own metaphor here. It'd be like, you know, the cat of societal discontent is unable to slay the rat of economic impropriety or something like that. You know?
One thing I did think on the BBC News about this, actually, was they had some prominent film of the rat catcher coming to Downing Street, the male rat, the actual person rat catcher rather than the cat.
Rather than the cat.
Yeah, the person who's professionally a rat catcher.
Wearing a bowler hat.
Well, he was wearing, actually, a rather grubby mac and carrying a load of Asda bags, which contained rat traps, actually.
I actually meant the cat, but yeah.
Oh, right, yes. So not only were the BBC advertising Asda vicariously through these Asda carrier bags, but also they were clearly advertising this particular rat catcher's services. So now this rat catcher can proudly plaster on the side of his rat catching van.
By royal appointment, by prime ministerial appointment, yeah.
I think we should make it clear that other rat catchers and indeed other brands of carrier bag are available.
Absolutely, yes. You can have Tesco's carrier bag, Morrison carrier bag. I myself have got a collection of Aldi carrier bags.
Local shop carrier bags.
None of those other places actually have food, though.
I find you local shop carrier bags tend to be a mixture of Aldi carrier bags, Tesco carrier bags, and other carrier bags, because the local shopkeeper does exactly what I would do, which is take all the bags from my shopping, put them in a big bag under the counter, and then just give them that to customers when they want them.
Ah.
I might just have a particularly sort of scummy local shopkeeper, I don't know, but I get recycled carrier bags as a matter of course.
Hmm.
It's green.
So the story...
The story. Well,
Meanwhile, back at the point...
I think I've already summarised the story.
You haven't said that there's contention. You just said that they asked David Cameron,
do you want a cat?
And he said, I don't know. That's not a news story. Even the BBC would be hard-pressed to make that a news story.
I think that is what they have done, isn't it?
No, look at the headline. It says there's a pro-cat faction in Downing Street. That suggests there's some controversy.
So David Cameron said, and then at least one other person said, you should.
It's an all-natural solution, I bet.
It is, yes.
It might be the leader of the Green Party, for all I know. They might have had questions in Parliament about it. Might have been the first questions in PMQ.
There's a big precedent for this, because President Obama got some dogs for his kids as a present for, like, letting him go on the campaign trail, effectively. So why can't David Cameron kind of do the same sort of thing, but with his kids, we're getting a cat?
Could we not have the cat as a state gift? I mean, we have all these people come over for state visits and they bring gifts with them, and normally they're quite boring stuffed elephants or whatever.
Elephant is not boring.
Well, it is if you've got a rat problem.
I
imagine you've got a rat.
I can imagine what
are you
going to
deal with it, a stuffed elephant or a cat?
Its relevance for dealing with the current situation is not a measure of interest.
No, it'd be nice if it was just a thing that all state gifts had to be something that was actually useful rather than something indicative of your own shared culture. Huh? If it was sort of like you went to...
you brought like a tin opener or something.
Exactly.
And he's like, yeah, we need one of those.
Or if all the countries could have their own Amazon wishlist. And or something for, well, maybe John Lewis, I think, is more of a sort of Downing Street thing, isn't it?
2x nuclear warheads.
Exactly. And they could just like at a wedding, you know, when they all come for their state visits, say, oh, I've got you that cutlery set you wanted.
And secretly, and some of them presents would actually get taken back in exchange for something else.
You return the nuclear warheads to the United States.
Until this comes out in some diplomatic wires that get stolen, and that causes a whole crisis that you turn down the present.
Well, it rather depends on how good the diplomatic relations are with the country. I mean, if you get on very well with the country, they might come and say, look, I've got you those cutlery sets, but I put the receipt in the bag. It's okay. And if it's sort of a country we don't get on with, it's, well, I've got you I couldn't find the cutlery set you wanted, but I got these cheap ones from Tesco's, I lost the receipt, I'm afraid.
It will be awful to return them, though, because, you know, the guy from Sweden's going to come over and go, yeah, we have Swedish products, but the shop is only in Sweden, so...
yes, you can't return it. You have it and you can't take them back. Or if you can take them back, you have to come on a state visit to us, taking them with you...
It could be ceremonial that you enter the country, you hand over your state visits, you take a discreet trip to the central business district where you return the ones from the previous state. It's recycling.
It is. It's wonderful. I think it'd be great. What I would also like is if all the state presidents just did a big tour. There was this one single stuffed elephant that just kept going round from country to country.
Just pass it, pay it on, pay it forward.
So meanwhile, back at the show.
Back at the show.
This is the show.
I think what this shows, well, okay, so I think the fact that there has been any attention paid to this at all in Downing Street shows that David Cameron might share my own working practices, which is that sort of. So
if I professionally a cat.
Well, yeah, but more specifically, more generally, that if I've got a list of things to do, and one of them is frivolous and easily dealt with, like the question, do you want a cat? Compared to one that's like, you know, potentially boundless in scope and might be incredibly difficult and might result in my being like strung up by angry mobs, like fix the world economy, then I'd be doing this one. I'd get in the morning and go, should really get down to that economy, and then I'd spend till 10 a.m. playing Free Cell, and then at about 10 I'd go, you know what, I'm going to sort that rat issue.
But remember, he's a politician, he should know that, you know, on the list of important things that the British people care about, sort of immigration and
healthcare,
children's education. You know, little fluffy cat stories always trump anything. It's just a quirk of the British nature. So you can't just go murt on an issue with a small fluffy cat, right?
It's almost up there with Mumsnet asking you what sort of biscuit you like.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I think what Cameron should have done is he should have said, well, let's postpone the decision, but someone post on Mumsnet and ask. And then we use Mumsnet as a sort of as a barometer.
You could have a competition to name it. It'd be like the Blue Heated Dog.
Oh, absolutely.
So as long as you do actually take the suggestion that's done, because that was the competition, the cat naming that got them in trouble.
We could have an internet vote and have a cat called Rick Astley.
You realise it would definitely get hijacked by the Something Awful forums.
Well, exactly, but
we would end up naming it like Yoda or something.
Well, I have no problem with that. The one at the moment is named after a TV show, or the one that was there before it left.
What was it called?
It was called Humphrey.
Oh, it was in Sir Humphrey.
Yes, it's in Sir Humphrey. Sir Humphrey Appleby.
Sir Humphrey Appleby, yeah.
Yeah, yes.
And that's like the idea of all these people going to actually just speak to the cat rather than anyone actually important there.
Well, I think you can guarantee at least the cat is independent. As long as you feed it, it's happy. So, that story's probably run its course, hasn't it?
I think it probably has.
So while Chris accidentally activates a bookmark on the web browser.
let's execute a segue. Speaking of things that begin with a hard C, what about the kilogram?
Oh, that is an exceedingly good segue. I didn't even notice that coming.
Pretty much the best one. I suppose a cat might weigh about a kilogram.
Yeah, possibly. If it
that's actually a really light cat.
What about a kilogram? Having just made your own definition of the kilogram, Chris, what is science's definition of the kilogram?
Well, this is it. My definition of the kilogram has all the problems of the original one, which is that I might say this cat weighs a kilogram, and then that cat will go and eat a dozen mice, and suddenly the world economy is in all sorts of trouble because a kilogram doesn't mean the same thing as it did anymore.
Well, how's a kilogram defined at the moment, Chris?
Well, a kilogram at the moment, Rich, is defined using a cylinder of platinum stroke iridium, which is being very slowly eroded by the forces of time.
Wait, hang on, what do you mean a platinum stroke iridium? Surely surely they know what it is. It's not sort of like, oh, that looks like a platinum, maybe iridium, I'm not really sure. I just found it in the cupboard.
Really. I forgot to label it, and I can't remember.
Yeah, it's one of those.
It doesn't really matter anymore.
Perhaps actually what they've got is 2 half kilograms, one of platinum and one of iridium, that they've just accidentally mushed together.
Someone's taken a bit of barrel diet and gone, there we go.
Sat on the side of a balance that's perfectly straight. And one day I'll come into the office and it'll be not straight, and they'll go, ah, no!
Mon Dieu, my
assumptions about the nature of space-time.
Also your accent.
So the kilogram is defined, to actually state the thing here, as a particular lump of metal that sits in France, and that is said that lump of metal, that is exactly a kilogram. Whatever lump of metal weighs, that is a kilogram.
But the problem being that it now weighs less than it did when it was made.
I feel I should point out that kilogram isn't a weight, it's a mass.
Otherwise,
we're going to get angry emails from physicists across wherever they're listening to. Right?
Okay, that lump there has exactly a mass of 1 kilogram,
yep,
and weighs 1 kilogram times G.
Yeah, but G varies across the world.
Well, yes, that's why I said it weighs 1 kilogram times G. Did you know that G is particularly large in Cambridge?
Yeah,
everyone is a little bit heavier in Cambridge.
Because it seems like it's a low-lying, flat place.
It's true. There's a practical that's done in first year physics where you have to measure G to better than 1 part in 1,000. Mm. And the way they work out whether you're cheating is whether you get one that's too close to the data book answer. It's actually true.
And they check whether you're rubbish at physics if you get 12, which is what some people did actually get in my year.
I had an ex-girlfriend once who managed to defy...
What happened to her?
She managed to defy the laws of physics. She managed to cause gyroscopes to not work. Every time we tried to demonstrate a gyroscope to her, it would just fall over. And she was a physicist as well.
And then the universe reacted and caused her to not exist anymore.
Well, you know, thankfully, I don't think gyroscopes are vital to human life.
Not even in bikes. Apparently, gyroscopic
isn't the thing. Well, we have segued our way away from the story so amazingly that I feel we should move back to the story of the kilogram.
Okay,
so, that is the problem with the kilogram, but what is the proposed solution, Christopher?
The proposed solution is to define it like most scientific measurements in terms of the fundamental properties of the universe, which we hope are unchanging, like the Planck length.
And what is a Planck length? Apart from 10 to minus 34 centimetres.
I don't know. Oh, is it
the world gets fuzzy if it scales smaller than this.
Is it the de Broglie wavelength of a proton at rest or something like that?
Quite possibly.
But no, the world anyway. Get quantum fuzzy, quantumly fuzzy underneath this. So that could have been your segue, just like talking about science and things getting quantumly fuzzy, like cats.
So in some sense,
from the classically funny cat, classically fuzzy cat to the quantumly fuzzy kilogram. Yeah, okay.
To use an analogy which is wrong but very BBC friendly, it's the sort of the pixel size of the universe. It's the fundamental resolution that you get before which it's just a blob.
Okay.
Which is untrue, but sufficiently true that we can use it as a thing. So, using the Planck length, presumably by looking at some other exciting fundamental parts of the universe, we can define a kilogram. So why haven't we done that? What's the controversy? Why, every other scientific unit is defined by that way. Why is not this one?
Controversy, I think, is because we've always done it like that.
Oh, well, I see the Cambridge excuse.
And was it somewhat difficult to do when they first made it up, I think? The thing was originally constructed in... the first artifact kilogram was from 1889, when we didn't really know how to define mass using, you know, sort of fundamental scientific context. Constants, because we quantum physics hadn't been investigated at all at that time, and it's quantum principle which is being used to define the real kilogram.
See, we're both educational and entertaining.
Yes, let's stop being educational.
what I quite like is the little quote there we have from Quinn something or other saying the problem with the kilogram is it's a piece of platinum. Cast 130 years ago, full of holes and full of hydrogen. I had the idea that it might be like a Hindenburg disaster waiting to happen. It's full of hydrogen, it floats around Paris, and at some point it's going to crash and burn, and the kilogram will go away forever.
Science will lose all credibility if somebody bursts out of an office on fire going, "The kilogram has exploded."
No!
I'm wondering what happened to the iridium in this situation. It seems to have been replaced by hydrogen.
Well, they did say platinum stroke iridium, so perhaps Quinn, whoever he is, knows what he's talking about more than the person he wrote at the beginning of the article.
Speaking of fundamental physical constants, we're going to take a musical interlude now in a song which is very tenuously related because it's called Speed of Light. Hope you enjoy that, and we'll be back.
On air, online, and across Cambridge. Your station, your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble with me, Chris Moten, and regular co-host Michael Quinteria and irregular co-person Rich Wareham.
That was Speed of Light by Van Canto.
And we're going to be talking about some more silly news stories. In this case, about Kate Middleton.
Yes, this is what I like to call the celebrity section of the show. Kate Middleton has been barred from Facebook, it would appear.
Although, ironically, this is, in a way, the non-celebrity section of the show, because the key point is that this is another Kate Middleton who isn't the Kate Middleton.
Yeah, they tried to ban Kate Middleton, and they missed, and they hit somebody also named Kate Middleton.
No, they tried to ban this Kate Middleton because she thought that she was pretending to be the other Kate Middleton when she wasn't, when she was actually just her own Kate Middleton.
Well, that's their story, obviously.
Their secret plan was revealed too quickly.
Yeah, they want to sabotage the royal wedding, I suppose. I can't imagine why you'd want to.
Are they sending out invites to the royal wedding on Facebook now?
Approximately, they're going to change their relationship status to public so that on everyone's newsfeed simultaneously, her status becomes married.
that would be really nice in a way. Just like
it'd be very Web 2.0, wouldn't it?
Yeah, everyone just gets a Facebook message.
I don't want to get
Kate and Will's status.
I don't want to get hyperbolic, but I think that might be the worst thing that's ever happened. I'm going to have to insist. I mean, I know you don't have the power, but I'm going to have to insist of you anyway that you stop that from happening. Like, by whatever means you have to.
So anyway, this Kate Middleton was a mother from Kent who apparently logged out of Facebook and logged back in, only to be found there presented with the message that she didn't exist. Yeah. She was impersonating herself.
That's got to be it's got to be quite confusing when you suddenly get told that by a computer that you don't exist.
It's very existential, isn't it?
Yeah. In what sense do we exist? I mean, some people seem to think that if you're not on Facebook, then, well, you, for all real intents and purposes, you don't.
Who else does it happen to? We just don't hear the news. I mean, so, of course, the person who was in charge of the Iraq War, from our point of view, was Sir Michael Jackson. So did he log into Facebook one day between sending people to their deaths and realise, oh dear, Facebook's banned me. Well, when we finished here, we know who's going to get the next lurch. or which of the singer and actor Robin Williams do you think?
Nah.
You know,
I didn't know.
Robin and Robbie. Yeah, Robbie and Robbie, but, you know, Facebook might go crazy.
can't tell people apart by their first names because it sounds slightly similar. And we create a Facebook somehow managed to solve the difficult problem.
Well, have you not noticed that Facebook does that? If you search for someone like called Harry and you search for Harold, it'll come up with Harry as well. So it's got a common sort of name shortening algorithm built into it.
Oh. Isn't this how Skynet starts?
Absolutely, yeah. Starts knowing everything about us.
We could raise the cultural standards of the nation. If you search for Robbie Williams and said, excuse me, I think you meant Robin Williams, the notorious actor.
Notorious?
Notorious, yes. I don't know what for. I'm going to have to go and seed notoriety.
Presumably notorious from Walk and Mindy, which was a horrific programme.
I actually never seen it. It was always the thing that was on Sky One after The Simpsons.
Now, here's a little bit of a pop quiz for you. So, Mork and Mindy was a sitcom about an alien who comes to Earth and starts living with a beautiful lady, played by Pem Dorber. Beautiful. Mm. It was a spin-off from another successful sitcom. Do you know which sitcom?
Cheers.
No.
Hang on, that's Frasier.
Lost in Space.
No idea. No idea.
Mindy and Mork.
It was a spin-off from Happy Days.
Ah. What?
Yes, in a particular episode of Happy Days, Mork from Ork comes and visits Fonzie and learns about 1950s life in Milwaukee.
So I wasn't that far off with Cheers.
You weren't that far off. No, I thought you knew and just misremembered, but no, it came from Happy Days, so there are. Meanwhile, back at the story.
I've never even seen Happy Days. All I know about Happy Days is that there's a guy in it and he jumps a jet ski over a shark, and you shouldn't do that.
Absolutely, that's where the phrase jumping the shark comes from. It's when the program can't possibly top itself anymore.
Do you think this show has jumped the shark?
I think this show jumped the shark possibly in its pilot.
We jumped the shark in a plane. That's how impressive we are.
We jumped the shark with the theme music.
It's like trashy B-movies jump the shark with the film Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. At that point, you cannot have a title that just on its own sums up the whole B-moviness any more than that.
There's just a horrible feeling of pointlessness over all future B-movies.
Absolutely.
We can never best this.
I watched a horrific B-movie that came out the same time as Transformers called, I think, Transmogrifers or something like that, which was very much like Transformers, just with none of the special effects or giant robots. But lots of people looking off into the middle distance saying, look at that robot that's transforming off screen.
What's this actual story again?
The story is that Kate Middleton had been kicked off Facebook.
Oh yeah, we've done that now.
We've done that. That was the story. I think we'll be on. But let's move on to the next story.
Yeah, to
in
heck
our
with that story. Let's move on to somebody better known, like the Chuckle Brothers.
Exactly. I know the Chuckle Brothers a lot more. I would recognise the Chuckle Brothers in the street. I wouldn't recognise Kate Middleton.
That's true.
Because the Chuckle Brothers would have a large plane of grass and be going to me, to you, to me, to you.
And be riding along in a ridiculous sort of two bicycles sellotaped together. I don't know what that thing was.
Absolutely.
It was a chucklemobile, and whenever I see one, I term it a chucklemobile. I can only imagine those have been used by humans to get to places. But as far as I'm aware, that's a chucklemobile.
Now, this is one of the thing where we're going to actually split the fundamental atom of comedy. So instead, we're going to be talking about a single chuckle brother, which seems somehow oxymoronic.
Is it the chuck or the uckle?
I believe it's the ch. It's the younger of the two, I believe. No, he's the older of the two. Barry.
Oh, he is. Yes, okay. He plays the younger.
He plays the younger, but is the older.
Hmm.
He is 66 years young. Well, his real-life brother Paul is 63 years old.
And so what they've done is they've set up a school.
Now, he has.
Barry has.
So he has
well,
set
in
up
fact,
a school,
he
yes.
hasn't.
Paul eschewed the school.
Barry's son's partner, Charlotte Blencow, will be the head of a free school in Rotherham.
Yes, that sounds right. Sorry, I was trying to resolve the his son's daughter's cousin's wife or whatever, and figure out what that meant them. What that made them.
On a related note, when did the word girlfriend get replaced by the word partner?
Well, you don't want to make assumptions about the Chuckle Brothers, really, of any kind.
Well, no, but it says his son's partner, Charlotte, right? Admittedly, I am making some assumptions here.
Does it mean business partner?
A, his son is male, and it could mean business partner. That's the thing. But nowadays, you look at that and you think, well, that clearly means romantic partner.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. Indeed.
I have a tennis partner, and if I say this is my partner, Tim, people get the wrong idea. They think, wow, you're doing Tim Hemman.
Hmm.
And I go, no, I'm just playing tennis with him. Why are you playing tennis with Tim Henman? I said, well, he wanted to play someone worse than him.
Caught with that joke too early. We've got Tim Henman later in the show.
What really? It's a special guest star. Oh, I can see him on the steps. Oh, sorry, Tim. Oh, we need to get your mic level sorted before we go.
So withhold your biting tennis satire, sir. It will come useful later.
I shall. Anyway, so the Chuckle Brother has had a son. Well done.
which
is already quite a strange thing. I mean, you actually think the Chugga Brother having his, like, imagine Barry from the Chugga Brothers as your dad.
Oh, thank God. I thought you were going to quite some terrible, terrible place.
Well, obviously,
destroy my childhood.
There's a selection of hoops that have to be jumped through before you can become a father. And so, if you imagine Barry going through that hoop.
So is he paid this for this school then?
He appears to be allowing it to exist in his hometown.
Is that the news story?
Yes. He's related to a person who is the head of it.
Well, no, he's related to someone who's going out with the head of it.
Yes.
So why is the story just about him then? Why hasn't Paul? Because Paul is also related.
That would be ridiculous. Like, Paul, the person who's the brother of Barry, who is the father of the unnamed son, I'm going to call Ian, who's girlfriend Charlotte Blenko is going to be heading a school. That would probably not really fit into the headline space they have.
That was quite tortuous.
And there's also no quote from Barry at all in this story, which suggests to me that they have at no point have spoken to him. And they've just gone, a school! Also, Barry chuckle. they could have picked anybody if they were willing to go for a tortuous enough relationship.
Is that true for all schools? You take the head of any school that starts up, and you keep tracing the family tree, and at some point you'll hit
Paul O'Grady is responsible for this.
How many degrees of separation is this? It's only 2 degrees of separation. But
he's 2 degrees away from the head.
But
if you looked within all the 2 degree relations, you could probably find somebody better, like Colin Firth or like Fidel Castro. That'd be a story.
I would like to see your list of people ranked in order. So obviously we know that Colin Firth and Fidel Castro come above Barry Chuckle.
Yeah.
They do say that everyone is related to Edward II. They being the collection of people who are wrong.
What did Edward II do to deserve this over other kings? Was he a notoriously profligate king?
Well, he was a notoriously pious king, my memory says me. So quite why we all think we should be related to him.
And that's the opposite of profligate.
It is, yes. If you look in the thesaurus.
Do you know how many kids Jacob had?
Hang on. There was a song in that musical, wasn't there? Like Jacob and Sons.
Yeah.
Joseph was one of them.
Yeah.
He had a coat of many colours. Yeah. And what colours were they, Chris? They were red and green and brown
and the scarlet and black and ochre and peach and ruby and olive and violet and fawn and lilac and gold and chocolate and mauve and cream and crimson and silver and rose and azure and lemon and rust and grey and purple and white and pink and orange and blue.
And all of those dyes were available in the 1.3 release of Minecraft. I'm looking forward to that release. Oh, Minecraft. Don't get me started on Minecraft.
we're on the news. Minecraft, thankfully, has not turned up in the news in any meaningful form.
You wait till the first person starves to death because they need to get their mob spawner working correctly.
So, Rich, given that this show's average audience is sort of in the sort of range of sort of 15, 14 or so, and that roughly...
Age-wise or number-wise?
possibly both, but definitely numbers-wise. And that... about 0.1% of the population has heard of Minecraft. I fear that audience quantization is against you here.
You will hear of Minecraft. Eventually it'll come in. You'll download it and you'll go, what's all this fuss about? 9 hours later, you will have dug into a hillside and be crawling away from zombies. I guarantee it.
Is that in real life or in the game?
In both. To be honest, I walk across Jesus Green later
the game
at night.
Has been purchased.
I actually am a bit scared.
The zombies.
I keep looking around for spiders. If someone comes up behind me on Jesus Green, they start going, psss. I will run.
Yeah. I think it's time for another music break on that note.
If you're looking for Rich's wallet, that's the strategy to take.
Absolutely. Yes, another music break while I continue playing Minecraft.
If you have any comments about any of the news stories that we've talked about so far, you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or by going onto the website, www.camfm.co.uk, and clicking on the web form there.
Indeed so. We'll take a brief break. We'll be back with more silly news in a moment.
On air, online, and across Cambridge. Your station, your Cam FM.
Hello, and welcome back to Burst the Bubble. With me, Chris Smoten, and my regular co-host, Michael Canteria, and our guest this week, Rich Wareham. We're a show that talks about silly news.
We have had some feedback from the website, have we not?
We have indeed, yes. We had an email regarding the kilogram story. So what we learned for the future is that by being boring and educational, that's how you get the listeners. our correspondent says, isn't the kilogram defined by the mass of a mole of carbon 12 atoms? I thought they changed it 10 years ago.
Well, you made the point that defining it by the mass of a cat is a bad idea. So I don't see how defining it by the mass of a mole was any better.
It's...
How did they get the number of a mole then? Is that mole's a standard unit?
Yeah, but then if we may be boring for a moment, the mole is, I think, 10 to the 23 atoms. And I think a mole of carbon 12 atoms would not weigh a kilogram.
No, 12 grams. But then you can extrapolate from there to a kilogram.
Well, no, it says here the kilogram defined by the mass of a mole of carbon 12 atoms, which would be 12 grams. Well,
is it possible that the mole is defined by taking a kilogram of some standard thing, as it were, and then the same number of those? Like, for example, it might be the mole might be defined as a kilogram divided by mass of carbon 12.
I think a mole is defined to be the number of atoms of hydrogen required to weigh a gram.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, thank you for that email.
So the conclusion is we don't know. But consult Wikipedia for actual factual knowledge.
That's right.
Well, in some cases, anyway,
they're probably right on this one. It'd be a weird page to vandalise.
Well, they've gone through the website. They probably have Wikipedia open in another tab right now.
Yeah,
Minecraft loading as we speak.
Okay, so moving on from the kilogram. To camel racing, of all things. Can't think of a segue for that one. Camels weigh many kilograms. It's the best I can do.
The camels aren't moles.
We don't care. Just get on with the story.
Okay, so the story is camel racers in Dubai have been doping their camels, or not exactly doping them, but they've been mounting essentially tasers on their camels, which are remotely controlled, which you can use to zap your camel into a faster action.
I don't think it's any different putting nitro in your car in a rally, is it? Right. Now I've seen Fast and the Furious. They do that all the time. So presumably it's going to be a Fast and the Furious 4 hot camel racing Dubai. Yeah.
Is nitro something you put in your car?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I've not watched the Fast and the Furious.
It's a thing that's on lots of video games, but I always assume that was just a bad translation. That, you know, there's some Japanese word for which we fundamentally don't have a concept.
Have you ever played nitro? The computer game Wipeout?
Yes.
Which is driving around in the track very fast. I imagine that the camel racing probably could be a version of that as well. Yeah, the camel racing Wipeout. By Wipeout, of course, I mean the video game, not Total Wipeout.
The localised version for sale in Dubai.
Exactly.
The thing that got me here is that they have robot jockeys. So
they have robot jockeys,
why
yes.
Bother having a jockey at all, then? Have you not got an actual person on there?
Well, to mount your taser.
Well,
if you didn't have a robot jockey, where would you put your taser?
Imagine I would have the following conversation with you, Michael. Okay, so we've got these camels. They're going to run very fast. Is that exciting? That's quite exciting. They're ridden by robots. Okay, that's more exciting. That's a lot more exciting.
Robots with electric taser guns.
Absolutely.
So this is just obviously the next evolution of the sport to make it more exciting. I was a bit disappointed, actually, when after reading... I heard the headline about how the taser's being mounted. And I didn't realise at first that it was robot jockeys and stuff. So I thought the tasers were to knock out all your components with.
Like in Wipeout, actually.
You zap. Electrically cute zap.
Yes, I'd say this story kind of... It tickled my semantics nub, if you'll entertain the metaphor. In that they refer to these things as stun guns. And this I hate, because they don't stun and they're not guns. Like, things that stun knock things unconscious. These things make things go fast. And things that are guns launch things, you know, projectiles. These things don't launch projectiles. They're attached to a camel and zap it. What these things are go-faster zap-o-mats.
It's like if I called, like, the thing that caused my car to go when I put the key in the ignition and turned it with a stun gun. Because that also creates electricity.
Yes, with channels electricity.
Yes.
Unless you have a very old car where there's like a hand crank generator that you have to see, you crank it up until you can.
This is more.
There's a great big Jacob's ladder and a spark in it burst into life.
It's more a hypothetical car.
If it is, then I really want your car. Your car is just the coolest car.
It does sound exciting, especially if it's driven by a robot. Makes anything more exciting.
The car is a robot.
Michael might be a robot.
Your mum's a robot.
How would we know if Michael was a robot?
Well, very simple. We would provide him with some sort of logical dichotomy, and he would go, does not compute, and sparks come out of his ears.
Like defining the kilogram using carbon 12 atoms, and defining a mole of carbon 12 atoms by using the kilogram.
And then what do you think about that? We say, what is love, Michael?
Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. No more.
Exactly. We can sing rather poor early 90s songs at you as well. That will cause a do not compute error.
Only a robot would be able to resist that singing.
Well, obviously robots would like a sort of electronica and things like that, wouldn't they?
Well, would they? I mean, you know, it's like we don't like the sound of meat being bashed against other pieces of meat. Oh, well, okay.
I don't know.
I think Chris is going to have to take a personal moment just for a second here.
So I was thinking of, like, you know, a butcher with two legs of lamb or something, just whacking them together as crude percussion. That, you know,
rather than Chris slapping any of his meat against anything else.
I'd say I have an innocent mind, but it's not at all an innocent thought to think of a, you know, cows being hewn in two for the purposes of percussion. But it's more innocent.
You could make a xylophone out of their rib cage and all sorts of things.
Oh, well, yeah. Like, they do that in cartoons all the time.
Absolutely, and if life has taught us anything, it's that cartoon physics are exactly accurate.
It would probably tell us there was a god. Like, if you like, you finished butchering cow and then you went, this rib cage is perfectly tuned.
Now, moving swiftly onwards.
Leaving open the matter of whether or not there's a god for a moment.
I believe it's part for what... It's just time for something before my favourite part of the show, which, of course, is the end. But immediately before the end of the show...
It's time for the margin of...
Interesting anthology.
It's time for the anthology of marginal interest, a section of the show in which we take all the stories we haven't managed to get around to and say, like, not many words about each of them. Okay, go. Story number one.
A man was run over by a train in a mad stunt. He wasn't actually run over. He crouched on the rails underneath the train and filmed himself.
He did
filmed
run
it for
over
YouTube,
but yes,
and got millions of hits.
And what I like is that the Sun quotes a load of the comments from YouTube and says that they're insightful, which I think just tells you everything you need to know about the Sun, really.
Yeah, I like the fact that they've got pictures, which I can only assume that they're actually pictures from the videos.
Have you not watched the video? The video's on the website.
Because if they're not pictures from the videos, then the Sun have been doing some extreme camera work.
Extreme reconstruction.
I was surprised to learn this is possible. It's not popular. I was surprised to learn it's possible. You know, like, there's a big enough hole underneath the train that you can do that.
Well, I think this is the point they're raising, that people shouldn't know it's possible and then think, oh, I might go and try that, actually. Mm. This guy gets away with it.
So you could do the Indiana Jones thing. Yeah, you know, you could, like, rappel up the top of the thing. You know, it's like, grab onto it as it passes you, and then climb on
the top. Going on to
go over the tops of the carriages and so on. It'd be awesome. It'd possibly be lethal.
It'd have to be a very slow train.
True.
To go onto it as it went over the top of you.
Maybe if you mounted yourself on a skateboard. You know, like one of those inspection trolley things.
Or a hoverboard. You are in the future. We're only 4 years away from hoverboards.
You could just get on the train.
The future is now. Oh, man.
Could just get on the train. That might be easier. Next story.
The Civil Aviation Authority and farmers want to ban those lantern things.
The two greatest forces for good in the universe. The Civil Aviation Authority and farmers.
At the very least, the forces for boring. Yes, they're glowing lanterns, rather pretty. No. In the case of farmers, because it turns out they've fallen things and set them on fire. And in the case of the Civil Aviation Authority, I suppose, because somebody's been flying a 747 and gone, hello, Heathrow, I think I see runway 7. It's unconventionally located at 3,000 feet and moving rapidly, but I shall try to land on it anyway.
I like to think the fact that one of them has got stuck on a windscreen. They've been flying along, there's a lantern with one of those sort of messages they hang from them saying, like, to mum, may you rest in peace. Okay. Great, that's very sweet, but really not appropriate.
Hello, flight F-27.
Yes.
Moving on. Yes, this is an anthology.
Story number three. J.D. Salinger turns out to love Tim Henman and Burger King.
Now, you see, I took a long time before I realised that this wasn't the guy that wrote Fly Fishing in those Yellow Pages adverts. I was very disappointed when I found out it wasn't him, so I stopped reading after that point.
It's just a big thing, because this guy was basically a recluse from the public eye, despite having written a book which everyone...
Fly Fishing by J.R. Harding.
Catcher in the Rye, which everyone gets a...
The less exciting sequel.
Gets forced to read in English lessons, basically.
No bookshop stock it. Unless your phone ran the Yellow Pages.
It's basically the story of a angsty teenager going, no one understands me, the world's crap.
Hmm.
But then he takes the Yellow Pages, stands on it, and gets to kiss the girl under the mistletoe. That's the ending they don't let you read at school.
The Yellow Pages selling on that now.
Absolutely,
it's pretty fat. I mean, if you've got a short leg of a sofa or something, I mean a really short leg of a sofa, then why not? Yellow Pages.
Replacement steps.
Thick.
Well, there was that
news story. The Yellow Page. Oh, sorry.
There was that news story last week. The hotel built out of rubbish. Are the stairs in it actually just built out of copies of the Yellow Pages?
I was going to say that there was a story that phone books and Yellow Pages are getting thinner, and everyone was trying to work out what it was. And then BT came out and said, "Well, that's because we're printing more of them now. Because they are regional. We've just made the regions that they cover smaller."
Okay. And also that you'd need to be sort of from the 1890s or so in order to be using a phone book.
That's true.
That's the other bit.
Moving on.
Moving on. Story number 5. Scalectrics are releasing a cycling-themed Scalectrics, in the sense of, like, take your standard Scalectrics, replace the plasticky car things with plasticky bike things. Huzzah, you have product placement.
Yes. The thing I like, what I find amusing about this, is that they're hoping that all the people who buy these sets don't realise that with it being an oval, one of the tracks is shorter than the other. And they've made no attempt to do anything with this at all.
The story also begins with an outright lie, which is says that for half a century, the interlocking plastic jigsaw of a Scalectrics track has been a British child's introduction to the glamorous world of motorsport. This is a lie. Scalectrics for half a century has been the British child's introduction to the concept of copper oxide, in the form of putting the thing together and going, ah, it does not go. Why does it not go? And then your dad says, ah, that'll be because of something. You should rub it all with sandpaper. That's because of the copper oxide, see? And then you go, right, now it does go, but only in places. The cars stop more or less once every lap at this one particular place. And your dad would go, oh, you should rub it with more sandpaper. And after 3 months of effort, you would have a passable racing game that was still worse than all video games ever made.
It was one half of a child's introduction to pain as well, whenever they stood on it. And you get the sort of sharpness in. The other half being provided by stickle bricks, of course.
And also a childhood introduction to that smell that the Transformers always made.
Oh, yeah. Ozone, I think.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that...
Oh, do you remember the Ozone that used to be on, like, Channel 2?
I'm actually too young for the Ozone, so ha!
Oh, good grief. Live and Kicking? 8:15 from Manchester?
Yes, there was Live and Kicking. I watched Live and Kicking, and then there was Fully Booked.
Next story.
And I was too cool for Fully Booked.
Gail Porter.
Next story, quick.
On that note, story number 6.
Far better than Morag the Cow. There's a papier-mâché milk bottle arrives in UK supermarkets.
Yep.
Is that very different from cardboard?
Well, the interesting thing here is the fact that there was only just one, and it held all of the UK supply of milk. It was just a very, very large papier-mâché milk bottle.
It's still not the... So this is supposed to be an environmentally friendly version of the milk bottle, but it's still not the maximally environmentally friendly one, because that is, of course,
a cow.
Cheers.
So, I just felt that you needed extra help over that last little bit, because we're running out of time.
Just a bit of a... Yes, double up on the punchline. Twice the punchline, half the cost, burst the bubble. Okay, as Michael is hastily waving his hands at me, it's just about time for us to go. Although, fortunately, the playout system is misconfigured by 4 minutes, so it's nearly time to go. We just have the time to acknowledge our contributors. Jasmine says that carbon-12 has been used to define the unit of atomic mass, whilst a kilogram is defined by a big block of metal. So, yes. Jasmine again, says that the little girl standing on the Yellow Pages to kiss someone was the Yellow Pages advert years ago. So you could say they did sell on that.
So, they did rebroadcast it this Christmas, though. I remember noticing it.
And they don't sell...
Well, they sell True, places yes. in it.
They were giving on it, yes. All right. On that note, let's wrap up the show. This has been Burst the Bubble, and our guest this week has been Rich Wareham.
Hello.
And the regular contributors have been Mr. Michael Contario.
Bye-bye.
And me, Mr. Christopher Noden. We'll be back talking about more silly news, this time next week. Goodbye.